Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. We do have our agenda circulated. If ever I can actually bring to your attention, it's the 9:30 to 9:32, the 2 minutes to get our meeting started. I'm sure in the packages you have, you should be able to have 3 sets of minutes as well, honorable members, which is actually the minutes of the 3rd December. The other one is 18th, the 2019 December, and then 18th February 2020, and 19th February. So we will actually look at that, but if we can then just look at the apologies, we do have 2 apologies. One is actually for medical purposes, honorable member Moise, and then the other one is actually party business, which is actually honorable Mathieu. So there are 2 members of the committee that attend the apology. I'm sure you'd actually be able to accept that as a committee. If you're comfortable with that, you can then look at the agenda.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable Mantashe has asked me as a work to submit for her. She is on the premises. She's just busy in another meeting. She will arrive at.
Can we just note that that apology for Mantashe, which is actually other business, but might be coming late, will be coming late, obviously, because we've started. So I think we've covered apologies. In terms of the adoption of the agenda, honourable members, we do have a consideration of minutes. I hope everyone has got the 3 sets of copies of minutes we have before us. And the other one, we do have 2 presentations, which is actually Mesa and Summer. I'm sure you do actually have those presentations. I think we will then have discussions after tea, and then we will conclude just before lunch. If I can actually just get members, if we're in agreement that we can have the agenda agreed to, we are.
Chairperson, good morning. I propose to adopt that.
Okay. Any second? Captain? I'll take it to check. I will check. I'm sure there's no objection to any agreement. Okay, but then actually then for the purpose of today's meeting, I thought it would be important for me to indicate that is to consider the outstanding minutes which we actually have with you and to receive briefings from the National Petrology Institute of South Africa and the South African Accreditation System on the 3rd quarter financial and non-financial performance report. That's why we have those 2 entities with us today. The consideration of quarterly performances, the reporting form part of the committee continuous oversight over the department and its entities. That's the purpose of today's meeting. But further, one can say the MISA and SANAS together with the NRCS and SABS are the country's 4 technical infrastructure institutions. Further, one can say the MISA and SANAS are responsible for the foundation of the infrastructure, of this infrastructure. And further, NEMISA develops and maintains the measurement standards that underpin this infrastructure, while SANAS accredits laboratories and technicians to ensure that they are competent to provide accurate results for conformity of assessments. Can we welcome the 2 entities? And I think maybe we should actually then request that you allow us to do this administrative part, and then from there we go to the presentations. Thank you very much, and you're welcome. Can we then proceed, before we introduce the entities, we'll just go straight to our next point, which is our item agenda of consideration of minutes. Can I put before you the 3rd December copy of minutes? Can we look at the first page of the minutes, if there are any issues you'd like to raise? Tuesday, 3rd December 2019. If ever there's no specific issue or correction on the first page, I'll ask you to look at the second page on page 2. If ever there are any issues that you'd like to correct or delete or update, I would assume that on page 2 of the minutes, on the record that reflected the members are comfortable with that detail. Can I ask you to then look on the 3rd page? If on any issues on page 3, we do actually have a recommendation, which actually proceeds to the next page, which is page 4. We do actually have the conclusions of the meeting, which actually issues listed there on page 4 to page 5. And obviously we do have the recommendations, which are actually recorded on page 5 of the minutes. Unless there's actually any correction, the final point we do have on from page 5 is consideration of the oversight and the first quarter program for 2020. We did yesterday approve our program between now and March, which actually does cover the first quarter for our parliamentary program for 2020. So can I just check if ever maybe when we look on the 6th page, Emma?
Thank you, Chair. Just to note that the attendance register is not attached. You're still coming to make this the right one. So I want you to say number 6 on the last page.
Okay. Maybe what we can do is that we can allow you just to speak to that as well. Because on my part, the corrections and methods arising, we can try and actually cover both. You can go ahead there. Troy, is yours?
Yes, yes. Chair. On number 6, I did speak to the secretary, Mr. Ellen, around this yesterday outside the meeting. But I see here that we were of the opinion that we had agreed that by February we would have a proposal. But I see here says that it will be finalized in the first quarter of 2020. I mean, but that only brings us till the end of March, because I think we must just put pressure so that we don't leave this matter too long, so that we receive the relevant training modules if there is
some have been developed for this committee. So the amendment, if you can suggest, is just the comment. Okay. So in terms of resolution, it's definitely captured properly, because that's the purpose as well. No, thank you very much for the comment, honorable member. Issue of attendance register, I'm sure we'll try to actually correct that. Yeah, we'll actually do that. Unless maybe there's any other issue, can we say then the minutes which we have for the 3rd December meeting, if I can actually get that with the comments you've got from Honourable Sweet, we can actually then proceed to adopt or accept the minutes as through reflection. Mulder?
Chair, I'm looking at option of the minutes of the meeting of 3 December 2019.
Thank you very much,
I second the adoption.
Thank you very much. Can we take the next copy of the minutes? That's 18 February. 18 February. And we'll actually look at the first page in terms of actually the detail there. Are there any comments, corrections on the first page? If there are none, can I ask you to look at the second page of the minutes? We did actually look at the briefing by SA, and we were actually looking at our provincial one-stop shop, which actually is the issue of the DGI. So if there are no other issues, and I think maybe on this one we do have the last page, which is the register of the attendance of members, which is actually attached to the minutes. Are there any comments from the members on that? If you have no comments, can I ask that you consider and indicate if you accept or not the minister before you? If it's through reflection, please indicate. Down, welcome.
Good morning. And my apologies for not being able to say. I hope for the children of the
ministry. Well, even now, our visitors will know that if you drive your own car, you would have come later an hour. But if you go by bus, you might be slightly late. So getting to Cape Town is very difficult in the morning. Yeah. Thank you very much, Kutawu. Can I get a second of Mulder? Mm-hmm. Or you want to make a comment first?
Yes, sir. Just something on the payments register.
Yeah.
The signatures, there are two signatures. I don't know maybe you are through that, but here's the same signature. I don't know if here's the one of the answer. It's just that correction that needs to be made.
Okay.
I never made my apology sign twice.
Well, the point which was going to be difficult, Yako, was to say you signed the register, but you actually are recorded as having apologized. It was not actually double booking. No, thank you very much, Honorable Mulder. I'm sure members are in agreement, so that is the comment. Can we then proceed to the next set of minutes? This one that is agreed to. We're looking at the 19th February minutes, where we actually had our committee meeting and the briefing. We were actually able to look at the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. Are there any comments on the first page of our minutes? If you are comfortable that the record is correct, let's actually look at the second page, the issue of introduction. There is this issues which are there. And I think we can be able also to note the register attached to the minutes of the 19th of February. If we are comfortable, then we can ask members to confirm that the record is true and accurate. It is actually covered, because it's the point where you say because it's postponed, we actually did we reschedule. I think that's the main point for it. Yeah, we did actually do that. In terms of the approved program, we approved yesterday. we try to actually accommodate that point.
On that note, Chapter 20,
We are essentially asking that we accept the amendment.
I'm taking the document.
The minutes are agreed to a true reflection of the meeting that we had on the 19th of February. Can you remember on our agenda, the consideration of minutes item has been dealt with? Can we then actually invite, we will actually then speak to the minister, and maybe firstly get the introduction of the minister team, and I would actually ask those ones to proceed. So I ask the chair to actually then tell us that she's here and inform us that the team is with her, and then we can proceed from there. Good morning. Welcome. Floor is yours.
Good morning, everybody, and honorable members and colleagues. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Jabu Salimen. I chair the board of women minister. I'd like to introduce my colleagues here.
Maybe just pull the mic closer to you. Yes.
Thank you. I would like to introduce my colleagues here. On my left is Mr. Dr. Mufuki, our CEO. And on my right is Mr. Carlos Chitabello, our CFO. I would like to hand over to Mr. Dr. to make a presentation on the core business of the institution. And then thereafter, I'll ask Mr. Chitabello to present what the financial. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, good morning. I will just pick up where the Chairperson has left when he was sharing the mandate of the two institutions, and try to, if we look on the slide on the presentation outline, take number one to number five, which I've talked about NIMISA overview and what we do, and then I will look at the highlights under number six for the quarter three that ended in December, and then go slightly deeper on 7 and 8, just looking at the performance of the institution, and then deal with the challenges and constraints that we are facing, that I try not to only pick up the challenges faced in the quarter, but pick up the theme of the challenges for the organization, which led to what we face in quarter three. So having said that, Chairperson, I must say I am impressed that the mandate of the institution was clearly outlined. So it actually helps me to move straight to the point in terms of indicating what our vision and mission is. It is to, as an institution in South Africa, the Metrology Institute, be the center of measurement excellence for the country and for the continent by providing measurement standards that we call the NMS. If you go to the next slide, just looking at our mandate.
Maybe to just have that discussion a bit, because you know on my part I was talking about the four entities. Maybe on the introductory part it might be good to speak to how you relate it. That's what I've tried to do, but maybe when you say it as the first part of your introduction, then it will show us who's where, so that when you speak to your area of engagement or area of responsibility, it will actually help us locate where might everyone be. Just as a comment, it might be helpful.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll try to lay that context by stating the following. The quality infrastructure, for which in South Africa we call the technical infrastructure, is very much critical to assuring the safety of the population. It is very much critical to facilitating trade, to ensure that trade in goods and services is supported by agreements between those that trade that are based on sound testing and measurement. That eventually assures quality of life for the population, as well as allowing for law enforcement as well as health care. For that to happen, you need a quality infrastructure which we call TI, which has standard setting as one of the pillars of the quality infrastructure. Within our environment is the South African Bureau of Standards that does the documentary conventions that we agree to. Now, to have those standards would not help us a lot if you cannot have an agreement as to what goes into those standards. And that's where the setting of scientific standards, scientific measurement standards becomes very important. And this is where the NIMSA, the NMISA, comes in developing the scientific measurement standards. Now, this is a very critical function that also allows us to benchmark our measurement and our testing in the country with the international counterpart. So we do our work considering international comparisons of standards such that NIMSA provides for the equivalent of measurement that happens in South Africa to the rest of the world. Now, within the quality infrastructure, there's a need for conformity assessment for those standards that we agreed on. When that conformity assessment happens, the consumers would usually engage with the certificate that comes from conformity assessment bodies. Now, those certificates can only be trusted if the conformity assessment bodies, which are the laboratories and the different institutions that does that conformity assessment, have been accredited by a third party independent accreditation body. So that is where SAMNAS comes in as an accreditation body. Now, when it goes to the market, when already trade is happening, to ensure that safe products are put into the market, to ensure that unsafe products are locked out of the market, there is an element of compulsory certification that needs to be administered and regulated. And that is where the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification as the fourth pillar of the quality infrastructure comes in. So the four elements interact together in a very well-structured and internationally benchmarked manner to ensure that even when we go to international trade in World Trade Organization guided processes, we are aligned internationally to the likes of ISO for standards, ILEC for accreditation, the legal metrology body, the OIML, and the scientific metrology body, the VITF, which we as NIMSA are a signatory to the NIMSA convention. So having given that brief background here, I hope it will make it easier when I present our mandate as mandated by Act number 18 of 2006, the Measurement Unit and Measurement Standard Act. It will make members understand why our mandate is as it is. Our mandate is simply to provide for the use of the measurement units of the international system of units. I spoke about that in international equivalence as very important. And to designate certain other units in South Africa. That is a very broad statement. We are in the Cape now. People will know that in the Cape we still use the Cape foot to measure the property in the Cape. And there are people that are still using that. And we have designated it and gazetted it as a measurement standard for the country, because people are using it fit for purpose for the country. We compare the standards with the international world to ensure that there is international comparison. We perform reference analysis. In the case of a measurement dispute in a South African court, whatever is in dispute will be brought to the NISA to measure. Once we've done that measurement is considered the most correct result. And the case gets settled based on our measurement. We maintain and develop methods for chemical measurement, as well as some reference material that are used as reference standards for measurements by the laboratory. We have expanded this function recently to provide for matrix reference material. This is a very critical element because measuring, say, a contamination, I'm looking at the yogurt that is being consumed in the morning. To measure a contaminant in the yogurt is not the same as measuring it in the water. So usually you would be able to measure the contaminant when it's pure. But the moment the matrix effect comes in, like the milk fats and lipids and proteins in the milk, they interfere with your ability to measure that contaminant. So we prepare reference material that allows you to measure, even in matrices. And this is especially important for us for food safety, because the food that we consume, like our pap, is special to us. The continent, if you look at cassava, if you look at groundnut, and other food that we consume, in the format that we consume them, is very much special for us. So to ensure food safety, we develop reference material in those matrices, and then we disseminate traceability in that way to the laboratory. Chair, in the current strategic planning process for 2019 to 2023, we, as the NISA, developed four strategic objectives that we are implementing our operation, considering the trust of first providing metrology services for government to support foreign data services. The second trust is metrology consolidation for state-owned entities to provide for efficient shared services. This is very important, considering that there has been a fragmentation over time of metrology capabilities in different SOEs, more especially the applied metrology level, where the SOEs, let's take Transnet and ESCOM as an example, would use electricity and magnetism measurement for their operations, and they have established their own metrology labs in the different SOEs, which is not first cost effective, but most importantly, it spreads the capabilities that we have in the country very thin, such that we are not able to consolidate what we provide to our SOEs. So the trust is to consolidate those metrology services. Trust number three is what we've been doing, which is providing metrology services for industry, such as manufacturers in the country that done measurement traceability that is linked to the international measurement standard. The fourth one is to consolidate the legal metrology function and eventually bring only the legal metrology function into the NISA, so that we have a national metrology institute that is what applied metrology, scientific metrology, end legal methodology altogether, because at the moment the legal methodology act has been is being administered by the NRCS, and we have analyzed the trend internationally has been that of ensuring that all methodology is consolidated so that you have a proper shape that you need, a strong scientific methodology base that you can use to then have a legal methodology function that is very functional. So our drive is that of working with the DTI to review the act to ensure that the methodology is consolidated under a methodology institute that is for all functions. I thought I would put that slide just to show the areas in which we operate, which are areas that span the physics textbook from chapter one to the last chapter, which is we've divided them into two technical areas of chemical materials and medical methodology and physical electrical methodology that have got measurement capability in the different areas. If you consider the chemical, medical and material methodology, we've got biomedical sciences that also include radioactivity testing and providing standards for the nuclear testing work that happens in the country, both for medical applications as well as for energy application. Chair, I'll move on to the next slide. Just letting on the previous slide to say, it's a knowledge-based entity that requires depth of knowledge in the field, but at the same time you are required to provide service to stakeholders such as the hospitals and the technical and the different companies that do manufacturing. Now, we have decided to run the organization in a matrix organizational structure, which takes advantage of both the project strength of the project organizational structure, which is delivering to clients, whilst we take advantage of the depth of knowledge in the technical entities. So the project that we have structured for the strategic planning period is one, the revision of the SI, which is trying to keep up with the happening in the measurement world. As an example, Chair, the kilogram as we know it ceased to be used as an international prototype of the kilogram that is sitting in the vault in Paris somewhere. Now there is a need for realization of that kilogram using the principles of physics, electricity, magnetism, and gravitational force, which requires experiments that we are currently having a collaboration with the NPL, the National Physical Laboratory in the UK, to develop the Watt balance, the Tibor balance, which is the new way of realizing the kilogram that has been introduced or agreed to by the Vita Convention in 2018. Our intervention in the process is to develop an Africa fit for purpose Watt balance. The current Watt balances that are running in the world are as big as this room, but it's a big experiment. But we are developing a desktop balance that you can be able to use, and it is cost effective. As I indicated, we develop fit for purpose measurement standards for our environment. The other project, Chair, is consolidating measurements that have to do with green economy. There's a project that consolidates projects that have to do with advanced manufacturing. The development of reference materials, Chair, considering the Africa Free Trade area, the negotiations and processes that are currently underway. Food safety is going to be a key, and the trading in food across the borders is starting, already we are seeing it is starting to create challenges where the measurements that are done when these products are traded do not have necessarily a good traceability to standards. So it is very difficult to ensure that there is fairness in that trade, but at the same time you are protecting the population in the process. So we have developed that program to develop reference material to support the trade in food in the continent. There's a program for quality of life and energy efficiency. Chair, these programs are run under a theme of shortening the traceability chain for South Africa and the continent to ensure that when the measurements are done, they are as accurate as possible, and the assurance of that accuracy is ensuring that the traceability from the standard, national measurement standard, is as short as possible. Chair, if we look on the slide that talks to highlights for the quarter three. Quarter three has been a very short problem. In our metrology world, it is the quarter for international meetings, the quarter that we do a lot of international engagement, because the countries in the north and other parts of the world prefer to have their meetings during that period from September to December. So most of the work that was done during the quarter and some of the plans that we have set really revolved around the international work. So the highlights in the quarter, the first one is the completion of a proficiency testing scheme for mycotoxins in maize. We as NIMISA developed the certified reference material for mycotoxins in the matrix maize. And then we ran a proficiency testing scheme. When SAMAS does their assessment for accreditation, they check if the labs are proficient to do the testing that they do. And what we do at NIMISA is knowing the contamination levels in the matrix maize, we would then send samples to many laboratories that participate in the PC schemes that they test, and then they bring their results to us, and then we would be able to determine their proficiency. This was a very successful proficiency testing scheme because we had 20 laboratories participating, 10 of which were outside the country, in countries such as Kenya, Uganda, Malawi, Ghana, Mozambique, and there was 5 that were outside the continent. So we had laboratories in the USA, Brazil, Belgium, and Turkey participating in our PT scheme. It was a very successful PT scheme, and that is why we saw it as a highlight for the quarter. Together with that PT scheme, we also ran one for aflatoxins in peanut butter, the matrix peanut butter. We also started providing the reference material in our online purchasing platform for aflatoxins as well as mycotoxins in maize. During the quarter, we also had successful assessment for continued accreditation for our time and frequency laboratory, which provides the South African standard time, as well as the dosimetry laboratory, which provides standards for radiation therapy, for diagnostic radiology in the hospitals, for the likes of your X-ray machines and the CT scans and the different machines that get used in diagnostic and treatment in the hospital. Chair, just looking to the performance in general, NIMISA has 15 key performance indicators that during the quarter, 7 of those 15 were met. The other 7 were not met, but it is important to note that these are targets such as running of PT schemes where the process has been started. We have done our part. We are just waiting for the other laboratories to submit their results so that we can conclude the process. Some of them have already submitted and the PT schemes, as we speak now, have been concluded. So I will take you through each of the targets that were not achieved, just to indicate how far we are. And I just want to assure you that we are confident that the 7 targets, with the exception of the 8th one, which is the revenue target, we will be able to meet by the end of the quarter. This is nothing new for the NISA, as over the past 6 or so years, we've been achieving over 99% against our planned targets while we deliver on clean body and good governance at the same time. Chair, I think in the interest of time, I will not talk a lot on the targets that are achieved. Just to mention the targets for membership for international consultative committee, which is very important for us assuring the position of South Africa in the international measurement world. We are currently members to 10 of the 10 international consultative committees for measurement as of last year. We actually, I think it's very important to also highlight that we have the presidency of the CIPM, which is the board of the meetup convention under the CIPM. We are providing that international leadership for not only South Africa but for the continent as a whole. If we move to the slide that talks to quarter 3 targets not achieved. The first one is the number of new and improved national measurement standards and reference material and methods, where the target was 8 for quarter 3. We concluded 1. The rest of the 7 are currently being completed. What has just happened in the third quarter, as I indicated, because it was an international meeting period, some of the intercomparisons get discussed in this international meeting. So by the time we put the report together, this has not been concluded, but we are confident that we'll meet it by the end of the quarter. The same goes for the inter-laboratory comparisons and proficiency testing schemes. This target we will be able to meet by the end of the year very much comfortably, as well as the percentage of metrological services covered by CMC. An important measure, the CMCs are claims of measurement capability, which talks to the capability of the country to measure in specific areas. This gets recorded in the database of the international system called the Key Comparison Database, where we as the NISA are measuring the impact of the 533 claims that we've logged into the international database. We are currently at 64% of our measurements being covered by the CMCs, but we are comfortable that we will be able to reach and exceed that 80% target. In terms of the next slide, the accreditation, number of accredited laboratories, we had planned some of the assessments and when together with SANAS we tried to sort the international assessors. They were engaged in international meetings, but they've already come in during January and February. So I'm pleased to say that we've already done those assessments. We are just awaiting SANAS confirmation for our accreditation for the new services such as the measurement for LED light, which is actually the first accredited measurement for LEDs in the country. And as you know, we import a lot of LEDs from many different places in the world, and they claim a lot of performance guarantees that they give to us, but usually they say 30,000 hours, you put it in, within a few days it blows off. We've developed a method and a standard for measuring the LEDs that will be able to provide that assurance to the country. In terms of courses provided, we actually did two courses. The web courses that were planned, that we converted into training because of the number of people that attended, but the courses were provided. They were then postponed to the fourth quarter. Some of them have already been conducted. We will be able to meet that target by the end of the quarter. Chair, I want to spend just a little bit of time on the income generated target, because that is the target where we foresee that we will not be able to meet it by the end of the quarter. And some of the challenges that will lead us not to meet that income generation target are challenges that we've been facing at NIMESA for quite some time. One of them is the effective implementation of regulation by other regulators and departmental entities outside of the DGI that do not enforce the need for using metrology services when they conduct their regulatory functions. And this is becoming a big challenge. At times, when we have to enter into SLAs with government departments, it becomes very complicated because the regulation is not fully implemented, and it leads to us having developed the capability that we have and not utilizing it. So in essence, having inventory on the shelves and waiting for the stakeholder to use it, and it doesn't get used. We get recognized internationally for being a good metrology institute, but our own system is not utilizing it fully. And this requires a overall coordination of how we do regulation to ensure that it is based on the principles on which the quality infrastructure is developed for. Chair, the next one that we didn't meet is the number of government departments and SOEs that are satisfied in NIMESA. The target is to have 3 SLAs with SOEs. We are currently on track to have those 3 SLAs concluded because we've already signed MOUs. It's just a matter of finalizing them into service level agreements that is being worked on. Chair, that's the overall performance. The challenges that the organization faced, we've highlighted specific challenges in the quarter three narrative report, the detailed report, but I highlighted in the presentation the source of those challenges. The main one, which is key, being the fact that we are in very old infrastructure that requires recapitalization. We have reached the limit. We are doing our best to keep it going, but it has reached a point where something has to be done. We are currently refitting and repurposing and doing a lot of work that makes our operational costs go high, but the risk of things breaking beyond repair does exist. But the biggest of the challenges being we have received capital expenditure for capitalizing equipment. We've capitalized new equipment that is sitting in old infrastructure, and that creates a big challenge. We have been talking about this challenge for quite some time. There was a process that was started, which is a triple P process for recapitalizing the meter. But at the end of the process, affordability was mentioned as a reason why we cannot proceed with that process. And Chair, I don't know how to emphasize this, the need for recapitalization of the base of the quality infrastructure. It is so urgent that something needs to be done. The next challenge I've already referred to, which is a fragmented metrology service, which we are already working on trying to put it together. Misalignment of regulation to the QI, this talks to the challenge I raised with the revenue target, where there is misalignment of the implementation of regulating, and as well as the ineffective implementation of regulations that require measurement and metrology. Chair, in the interest of time, I will not give that example that I put there. I will hand over to the CFO to quickly go through the financial report.
Thank you, CEO, and honorable members of colleagues. The NMIC has three main sources of revenue. The CEO has already talked at length about the rendering of service.
CEO, can you switch the mic? Thank you.
The CEO has already talked about rendering of services, where we are underperforming on the target and provided the reasons thereof. In the current financial year, the DTI has managed to give us our entire allocation upfront in the financial year, and there is zero variance in terms of transfers from the DTI. That had a direct implication at the variance under the interest received, where the amount of interest is ahead from the expected budget in terms of the DME, so that the transfer from the DTI also resulted in a higher than anticipated interest received for the financial year. We go to the next slide on expenditure. The compensation of employees has been a little below the year-to-date budget. This is mainly because of the cost of living adjustment, which was below the budgeted amount as announced by the Minister of Finance. The operating expenditure is also included below. The main reason for the operating expenditure being below the year-to-date expectation is mainly because of the revenue from the rendering of services. If the revenue is below, we would also expect that the expenditure to achieve that revenue should also come a bit down to make sure that the balance is appropriately balanced. In terms of capital expenditure, which is 26% below the year-to-date budget, it's mainly, mainly due to the standards that require board approval. These standards, with a total of about 26 million, have been approved by the board in the third quarter board meetings. So we're sitting much closer to the actual annual approved budget, and we expect that we will achieve the expenditure target. So we go to the next slide in terms of special reporting. NEMESA has no project and wasteful expenditure for the year. We have no regular expenditure for the current year. The only item from a fiscal perspective that we have not performed according to standard is the payment of invoices within 30 days. As at that period, we have 32 invoices which were unpaid. We've noted that they did not affect any SMEs. They are mainly to the major service and large suppliers that we use for services regularly, like your gases and your travel
has been a bit later, mainly due to the reconciliation process. However, we are looking at improving the system to ensure that we do not have this unpaid invoices over 6 days. Go to the next slide in terms of the recapitalization. The CEO has spent an amount of time on this slide. Okay, from our side, from a finance perspective, is to emphasize that the previous estimation that was made was for around 1.7 billion. This will continue to escalate the current funding that we are receiving from the DGI is insufficient to cover the construction of the facility. That's good.
Thank you, sir. I just want to indicate to the House that much as we are low in terms of revenue generation, at the moment it appears as 12.6 million. By the end of the fourth quarter, we will have achieved another 30%. So we'll be out of line only by 30%, not by what is listed here. Thank you. And then on the issue of the delay of payment in terms of the two invoices, I just want to clarify that these invoices have nothing to do with us not being able to manage the process in terms of payment. But it's because of the delays and the reconciliation as it has been indicated, and that most of them are invoices that are for international suppliers, where we have to be careful in terms of payment, and we have to satisfy that we have received the goods in order, and that the skills in terms of operation and maintenance has been transferred for us to be able to pay. Thank you very much.
Maybe in line with what we have agreed upon when we started the meeting, that we'll take presentation one after the other. So we'll represent maybe invite the other part of the presentation. Then we'll have a break as it's recorded here, and then we can get to a discussion. Can I then invite, so what we received the first part of the presentation, National Metrology Institute for South Africa. Remember, those abbreviations are not very easy to translate. So when I knew you were going to see you this morning, I started practicing. So now, because we have actually done the National Metrology Institute of South Africa, the next presentation is the South African Accreditation System. So I'm sure we'll be able to pick up on the next presentation. The floor is yours. Welcome to the team.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. My name is Lunama Mayedo. I am the Chairperson of SANAS, and with me, I have my team. On my right, I have the Chief Executive Officer of SANAS, which is Ron Josias. And then on my left, I have the Chief Financial Officer, which is Ishmael Abdullah. And at this point in time, I would like to hand over to the CEO, Ron Josias, to take us through the presentation, and it will be at a later stage, if necessary, be ably assisted by Ishmael Abdullah, the CFO. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you very much for this opportunity. It's our first time that we are with the new portfolio committee. I have taken the liberty to put the annexes in terms of our vision and mission as an annex to the presentation so that we can deal with the issues that lead into the third quarter financials. So I'll be touching on our legislative mandate, who we are, what we do. I will give a quick overview of the SANAS 2019-20 APP as well as business plan, as well as the alignment to the DTI interventions. I won't dwell too long, will not dwell too long on that part, but I will then go into the third quarter highlights as well as the third quarter performance. and our CFO, Mr. Abdullah, will then take over to just give us an update on the finances for the third quarter. So what is our legislative mandate? We have been established in accordance with the Act, which is the, we call it the Accreditation Act. The full name is Accreditation of Conformity Assessment, Calibration and Good Laboratory Practices Act. It's Act 19 of 2006. In terms of that, we are responsible for establishing an internet-recognized effective accreditation and monitoring system for the Republic of South Africa. To do that, it was to ensure that we have a well-functioning technical infrastructure that is aligned to international best practices. The NAMESA CEO has highlighted that issue of our technical infrastructure consisting of the SABS on the standard side, NAMESA on the metrology side, SANAS on accreditation, and NRCS in terms of compulsory specification verification within the marketplace as well. So these structures are aligned to the international one, which we have similar in the region. We have the ASO, which deals with standards. We have AFRIMET that deals with metrology. We have AFRAC that deals with accreditation. And we have AFSEC that deals with electrotechnical standards on the continent. Internationally, we still have also the global quality infrastructure, which is the ISOs, as well as the ILAC IAF. The VMIP, OMI, are also responsible on the global level, and as you can see, it's got different layers as we move up to ensure the acceptance of conformity assessment results as broad as possible. The second part of our responsibility to support our industries that compete in the fast-paced global economy, specifically relating to the issues of competitiveness within the marketplace. Our third responsibility is support public policy objectives in terms of health, safety, and environmental, and broad-based economic empowerment compliance issues. So we do this by being established as the sole national accreditation body for accreditation within South Africa, or accreditation of conformity assessment bodies. And these conformity assessment bodies include calibration laboratories, testing laboratories, and verification laboratories. In this area, it ranges from all kinds of laboratories. Basically, if we talk about testing laboratories very specifically, it will go into mechanical testing, medical laboratories over that entire range. That is what we're responsible for. As well as for certification bodies such bodies as Certify Organization to ISO 9000 Management Systems, e-product, as well as health and safety ones as well. In the areas of inspection as well, we have created inspection bodies to also to international standards. These inspection bodies, most of them operate within the regulatory domain, such as our biggest use of accreditation is Department of Labor on the pressure equipment as well as occupational health and safety areas where inspection is required, where we accredit inspection bodies which give confidence to the regulator that they can make their decisions based on those results. We're also responsible for the BBBE verification agencies, and as you know, these are the agencies that verify entities' compliance to the relevant requirements of BBBE. And we have been appointed, or has been appointed since 2002 as a national body to monitor good laboratory practices compliance as principle in accordance with the Organization of Economic Development, the OECD principles. The Minister of Trade and Industry and pretty soon competition may also add any other scope in line with our accreditation as need, if the need arises as such. So what do we do? Apart from accrediting organizations, one of our key responsibilities is to take that recognition of an organization or conformity assessment body's competence and sell it basically as broad as possible. And what I mean by sell it is to be able to get it accepted not only nationally but internationally, globally as well. And we do that through conclusion of mutual recognition arrangements. So one of our first ones is to promote the acceptance of our SANAS activities in those that are created by SANAS and as well as our counterparts. We also liaise a lot with regional and international standards bodies and other bodies, technical regulatory bodies, metrology organizations in respect to all matters concerning accreditation. We're also responsible for liaising with national regulators in respect of matters of relating to accreditation. So you will see we have quite a few government departments, not only trade and industry, but we work across all government departments in support of their needs for accreditation or conformity assessment, or the confidence that they can have in the conformity assessment bodies. We promote the use of trade facilities, and we initiate, negotiate, and conclude and maintain mutual recognition arrangements, as well as we ensure that we conclude and be part of the international membership where issues of accreditation needs to be advanced in those forums. I'm moving to slide number 7, which is just a short picture, a summarized picture of our strategic plan as well as our APP. Within these particular areas, we've identified service excellence, support industrial development, global acceptance of accreditation, accredited results, and regional integration as part of our core focus areas. These ones are becoming quite important if we move on to the next level of outcomes, which is effective and efficient service delivery, competing or providing a competent network of conformity assessment and bodies that can support the regulators in their health, safety, and environment protection responsibilities, as well as providing a network of conformity assessment bodies for global trade and industrial development. The last one is basically providing accreditation and supporting the provision of development of accreditation infrastructure within the region. And when I talk about the region, I talk about including the sub-regions and the continent as well. We've identified various other areas of measurement, such as improvements in our efficiency delivery, deals with issues of creditor payments, reduced vacancies, our IT infrastructure upgrade to ensure efficient implemented service delivery, the registration of previous disadvantaged individuals, and time for us to issue certificates, accredited certificates, and then general awareness of accreditation in the marketplace. In the areas of competing, providing competent conformity assessment bodies, we have developed and in the process of developing quite a few programs such as asset management, the rail safety certification schemes, the road transportation ones, as well, greenhouse gases verifications required by those companies that's listed on the JSE that need to be able to give confidence that the results that they claim to achieve can be relied on. In the area of the international acceptance of conformity assessment results, we play a major role within the international arenas, both. When I say international, I include regional as well as international as well. On the international front, we supported DTI in influencing the WTO in the acceptance of conformity assessment broadly. This is quite important because the acceptance or non-acceptance of conformity assessment data is one of the biggest technical barriers to trade right now in the discussion with the WTO. And as we know, if we don't address it and if the world don't address it, the issue of trade disputes increase. So if you look at the specific trade concerns before the WTO, a large percentage deals with the acceptance of conformity assessment data. And the acceptance of conformity assessment data is quite important for the acceptance of our goods and services in those markets where when it goes into another market, another country, another economy, the importing country, there shouldn't be questions about the competencies or the health and the safety of this particular product. It should be accepted on that particular basis. And if delays occur, we know the consequences of that. If we export fruit, for instance, and it's not tested in time, it has to be retested. By the time it's done, they might as well just throw it in the sea, and that's how these things go. We need to make our organizations more competitive in that space, and that is why this is important. In the region and regional integration part, similarly, it's quite important that SANUS plays a big role in that, and our strategy is influenced through leadership. So we hold the chairperson of the African Accreditation Corporation, as well as we are the secretariat for AFRAC, as well as for the SANUS accreditation. We are the biggest and the oldest accreditation body on the continent, and therefore it is expected of us to play those particular roles, but more specifically to ensure that goods and services that comes from what we now in the process of the continental free trade area, it will come to South Africa, save for our consumption, but at the same time we want to keep out those goods and services that don't comply to our requirements. These are all aligned to the DTI priorities as well. So if I go to the next slide, and I'm not going to dwell too long on that, but I'm just going to mention one, for instance, where the DTI's outcome was an efficient, effective, and developmental-orientated public service and empowered fair and inclusive citizenships. Our response to that was basically the improvement of our operation efficiency, deliver service with excellence, and very specifically on what we've identified those days, that time, was the reduction of the case vacancy rates, development of a diversified assessor pool, and reduction in creditor payments. Chair, with your permission, I want to skip slide number 9, and I'm going to go to slide number 10. 11, as such. Slide number 11 deals with some of the highlights. Chair, during the third quarter. Within the third quarter, we've hosted the Organizational Economic Development, Cooperation and Development, the OEC3 training course. We were elected last year to host this course. It was hosted in October last year here in Cape Town. There was about 31 economies that participated in from the 6 different continents. And the importance of this particular requirement is that, as I said earlier on, we need to ensure that the acceptance of our conformity assessment results is such that it will be accepted in any end country as such. So in this particular case, we are a signatory and we are appointed the monitoring authority for the OECD, and therefore our results would be accepted within the OECD countries. I think one thing that we're very proud of is that South Africa was one of the first non-OECD countries to chair this working group under the OECD. Chairperson, the other areas that we are focused on or achieved this, during this quarter was also a focus awareness among students. As you know, we are also a knowledge base and we rely on a lot of the expertise within industry. We have a course of 72 at this point in time. But we have about 500 registered experts from universities, from industry, even from government, that support on the technical areas those who have the technical competence to evaluate in a peer way other organizations. So our focus was a lot on students and universities, tertiary institutions. In that space, we have done, amongst others, live studio interviews to create awareness at the universities, as well as presented at the Postgraduate Research Innovation Symposium to ensure that the message gets through. We know that is our future group of people that's going to come through to be able for us to continue with the service and the expertise that we would require in the new future. Just to give you a breakdown then, Chairperson and honorable members of the organizations that we've accredited. To date we have 1,756 accredited organizations, and as you can see from the second slide, we've been growing steadily. If you look at the largest group of that we have is on the testing side. We have about a total of 431 accredited testing laboratories. We have about 400 accredited medical laboratories, veterinary laboratories is 25, and then on other areas such as BEE, we have 78, etc., and verification, calibration, etc., inspection, we got 252, blood transfusion services, so when you do go to the nation clinics and so, just make sure they have this accreditation certificate display. Certification bodies also, we've got about 68. Of those accredited, and it's quite important because normally when we talk about laboratories, and everybody understands Sonus laboratories. The scope is much broader than just laboratories, including inspection, certification, WBE, etc. So one of the other highlights that we're actually very proud of, we are now We have been a signatory for a long time, in fact, since the beginning of the International Authority Accreditation Corporation, which is the global body that manages mutual recognition arrangements among all the different economies in the world. We've been a signatory to that mutual recognition arrangement under the ILAC, the body that looks at inspection and laboratories for testing. And these testing organizations comply to the ISO IEC 1735 standards for calibration, also comply to the same, and the medical testing to the standard ISO 15189. We have been a signatory to those arrangements for a while. The same is for inspection as well. We have been a signatory to those, and recently in December we were one of the first accreditation body now to obtain signatory status to the proficiency testing under 17043, and Visa CEO highlighted the importance of that. We're also one of the first that will be included once launched into the reference material producer signatory status under ILAC. We have been evaluated already. They're just waiting on one region to qualify, and then we will be in there. So currently we are recognized, or some results are recognized in 104 economies that are signatories to the ILAC arrangement or mutual recognition arrangement. And that is for inspection, as I said, proficiency testing and laboratories. In the other area, which is the certification side, which is dealt by another body, which is the International Accreditation Forum, we also signatory to product certification. We have been reconfirmed, so every 4 years we get evaluated. So in the same way that we assess organizations, standards get assessed by the global peers. And we comply to a standard international standard ISO IEC 17011. So they came and evaluated our competencies to be able to perform accreditation. This year, one of the areas that they looked at very specifically was product certification. We held that for quite some time, so every 4 years it just has to reconfirm that we maintain our competence, and it was reconfirmed as well in December this year. We also have product certification for Global Gap, which is a group of private individuals which established a system that which is recognized under the IAF arrangement as well. In the area of management system certification, very specifically ISO 9000, we held that recognition as well as environmental and other management systems under 14000 and 17021. Under the ILAC 1 for certification, very specifically, we are recognized in 93 economies around the world through their multilateral recognition arrangement. So the issue of acceptance of conformity assessment data, we're working hard to make sure that we get our results or our conformity assessment results recognized, which basically leads to hopefully the acceptance of our goods and products within in all these different areas. I will now go to the quarterly performance on room members on page 16 or slide number 16. Slide number 16 just gives us a quick overview of what we have set out for the third quarter. In the third quarter, we had 13 targets that we need to meet. Five of these targets relate to our first objective, which was our service delivery. Two of them relate to our promotion and acceptance of SANA's accredited results. Four relate to supporting public policy objectives, and two relate to regional integration. We have achieved 13 of those targets. Two we didn't meet this quarter, and I will highlight those ones later on. And seven of those targets we have overachieved. If you look at on average, then we had a performance score of 84.6% for the quarter three. On slide number 17, Chairperson, I would just like to highlight the areas where we did not achieve the desired target that we set ourselves. We set ourselves a 5% vacancy rate. We had a 5.4. Unfortunately, what led to that, not achieving that, is in the last quarter, in the third quarter, we had one resignation from our BBBE verification accreditation manager. We have now made an offer and was accepted, so a new individual will start on the 1st of next month. Our HR manager also left us, and we're in the process of recruiting a new HR manager. One of our credit clerk has been moved up in our processes to make sure that we have the necessary competencies in place where some of the people that are currently in there, one of the persons will be retiring soon. Chairperson, then on the slide number 19, the other objective that we did not meet specifically relates to the development of new programs, and this is the one that is CEDA who asked us to establish an accreditation system or a program for the National Code for Incubators. CEDA had a challenge with the incubators because there was no consistency in terms of what is an incubator, what standards do they comply with, and therefore the accreditation becomes important. We have had various developments in that area. However, one of the areas is also one of the areas that Namis highlighted is the development of the required regulatory prescribed or standards that needs to be put in place. Currently, CEDA is busy through the SABS to develop that standard, and CEDA is participating to make sure that those standards are accessible at the end of the process as such. So we hope in the next quarter we would be able to record some progress in that particular area. Chairperson, I would now hand over to our CFO that will just take us through the finances.
Thank you, CEO, and good morning to the chairperson and honorable members. I'd like to take the committee very quickly through the performance of the finance report itself. On slide 23, we present our income earned to date. SANAF itself receives, in addition to receiving its funding through the DTI, it generates funding through its core programs in terms of accreditation provisions. In addition to the accreditation provisions, it also provides knowledge transfer services in terms of training that's provided independently to various clients, both within the public sector as well as the private sector. As a whole itself, SANAF receives approximately 30% or is funded approximately 30% by the DTI, with 70% of its funding being generated through accreditation and knowledge transfer services. On the whole, in terms of its year-to-date income, its income has reflected a positive variance on a whole. Some of that has been contributed by additional interest that has been earned. Similar to NMISA, the SANAF received its transfer funding at the beginning of the year from the DTI, which it was able to invest and earn an additional interest over and above what it was budgeted for. At an expenditure perspective, on slide 24, SANAF's expenditure has reflected a year-to-date positive variance against its budget. And this is something traditionally, in terms of its pattern of which expenditure has been incurred, normally will reflect a lot more expenditure in its fourth quarter based on particular activities that would incur in the fourth quarter. On a whole, we then therefore do expect that SANAF will be able to at least reach a break-even point and not result in any losses as a whole. Chair, in terms of the committee through at a key or high-level financial highlight perspective, as we indicated, income is being generated or in line with its budget. Expenditure is also being managed in line with its budget. At other key matrices or other key indicators from a finance perspective, as was highlighted within the performance indicators, SANAF itself, in terms of its internal or APP target, it strives to pay its creditors within a shorter period than its 30 days, and we set a period of 20 days, and it then was then able to achieve and overachieve on its target of only 2.7% of creditors that were paid after 20 days, whilst its target was 5 days. During the period itself, we've not incurred any bad debts, right, or bad debts that we've written off during the period, which reflects positively in terms of its collection processes. We've also not recorded any irregular or fruitless expenditure during the period, with no material losses recorded during the period as well. At a statement of financial position perspective, SANET is liquid and solvent and is able to pay its liabilities. It's fortunate enough not to have any long-term liabilities on its balance sheet and on board itself. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, may I just check with the Chair if ever there's any further comment before we pass?
Thank you, Chair. Not really, Chair. I think I'm happy to decide.
And when we actually introduced our agenda or program, we promised a 10-minute break immediately after the presentation. So can we do that and be able to convene in 10 minutes? What we'll be doing, we'll just then ask members to be able to actually give comments, clarity questions, or maybe any input they'd like to do. Then we'll then allow you to actually talk back to those issues. And then we'll see actually how much time we have and the number of times that we can be able to see cover those issues. So can we break for 10 minutes? And then we'll actually come back for questions and clarity and comments. So we actually can then allow the members of the committee to actually speak to the issues raised through the presentation. So I will actually then invite members of the committee for the first presentation. Maybe we can do it in that way. For the first presentation, I ask that you make those comments. I'm sure then our guests will note and then move to the next one. And then we can from there move over to our guests to speak to those issues. Okay? So can I note the hands of members who would like to comment on the first presentation? If we can cover that. And then let me take Mbuyane, Mutaung, Mulder, in that order. Yako, should I put you on standby for the first presentation? I'm just thinking about standby like when I get to the fourth person and she decides to actually say something, then that's fine.
It's a bit technical for me. I think I should give the lead on the first.
Yeah. No, I actually had a WhatsApp engagement of two friends,
okay.
And I thought I'd be able to play it. Unfortunately, I couldn't. But what maybe I'll do is I'll pass it to Tsulu. Maybe Tsulu, if you can just forward it to everyone who's here, because it's very important. Because it has to do with Namita and Thomas.
Oh.
It's actually very good friends speaking at different levels. and to a point where the friend is actually quite happy of a very good explanation, but he's saying, I'm not sure what you really mean. You figure out from that side. So I actually have pointed hands, so I see you wanted to raise your hand as well. First presentation, we're taking hands now, just comments, questions for clarity. I know you as well, Kapit. Or you want to do I'll be starting here, going up and ending up this side. Okay. For the first presentation, Mbuyane.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the presentation. It's an eye-opening because now we're able to talk the language, the one that you just said. Mine was just a clarification question in terms of the age infrastructure. We have a program, how do we fix it? Because if now you can't be able to to the future revenue while the age infrastructure is still functional? How are you going to do it if the age infrastructure is normal? Then I'm told you're still hiding at the CSIR since 1900. So what is your plan of moving out of that state, given the infrastructure, and do you have a program? Then, and also the fragmented methodology. I just want to check your working relation with the MCRS and also NAMISA. They're giving the situation that the MCRS is going through some hardship. How are you going to at least assist? If not, well, what is the relationship there for? Well, the payment of invoice is fine because it's an international one, but you are saying every invoice must be paid. Yeah. For now it's fine because it's international. But every invoice must be paid, because if you're not paying those invoices, you're collapsing the very same customer that you not have. The question of revenue generation. Can you elaborate or to say what makes you fail to make the revenue in terms of generation? I think it was 15 results that the point you just said you could not make it. And why? How are you going to sustain the program moving forward? Because revenue is what will make you be operational. But if you fail to get revenue, the PPI will not allocate every time that you make money. Then if you can just relate to the food safety vis-a-vis the standard, as currently the PIN chart, whatsoever is happening, we proper that you get certain information as you are here in parliamentary, you are able to at least elaborate them and to make clarity to our constituents in terms of the PIN chart and so forth. I think for now I'll pause here. The last one will be the demographics. You said you have a workforce and that is the environment. I just want to check for sake of interest. You have four workforce in terms of demographics, you have gender, disability, how many, so that we are able to go on par as a party or as a portfolio. Thank you very much.
I thought when you're saying the fish, you will actually say something in terms of coronavirus. Okay, so I'm just thinking about it. Okay,
thanks, let me welcome the presentation. It's a very informative presentation from both entities. One will test in one of our programs as a portfolio to have a workshop with both entities to get more workshops around both entities. I am impressed with the relationship of two entities. I know you are not one. You are not an entity, you are two, but the way you according to your presentation, it shows that you have a working relationship that can assist us going forward. I will like if other entities that are working closely to be like these two entities. Two questions, NAMISA and Sanders, on your board. I would like to know the gender representation. Secondly, on your, I think that one, cooperating more about the gender too, the senior management organizational structure, I'm a little bit worried if the chair of the UNITA was not here, or be addressed by a post fire. Lastly, the question. To I heard you indicated that you have working relationship with other government departments. After you have set standards for them, who's responsible for monitoring? If are they complying or not? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Just the compliments from my side as well in this presentation. I think we all at EDM with the fact that it's very compulsory to have a standard measuring system in South Africa. All of these institutions, SABS included, are about standards, measurable standards. I think we saw the importance of that the news recently with the pinned fish question. What I want to know is the following. The laboratories that that's mentioned in your presentation, you mentioned of 20 laboratories participating in the proficiency testing schemes. Are they all state-owned or are some of them private? And then as far as the revenue target is concerned, you say that the target is not met. Question is, if you've got private clients, laboratories, do they pay well? Do they pay on time? And this, what if the state is, what is the stake of the state? Is it percentage wise? State-owned laboratories, for instance. Do they pay on time? The frequency, that's another question. And then as far as the number of interns and in-service trainees hosted, I see that the annual target was 15 and 21 achieved, which is excellent. Just a question, how does it influence the budget? Was it budgeted for? And then, the percentage, as far as achievements is concerned, percentage increase visibility of NISA. What does it mean? How do you measure your visibility? If your visibility is increased, what positive effects has it got? Is it also an income incentive? And then challenge as far as other state departments is concerned who are not actually on board with the services provided by NISA. How can we go about to get them on board? Would it be a possibility to get them through this committee? Because I think it's important that they get on board. And then just a last question, and this is a suggestion. I suppose that this institution's annual education is also declining on an annual basis. And we are living in economically challenging times. We recently visited the SABS, amongst others, and we all know that they are that had huge challenges. How sustainable is it without taking away the importance of the functions that all these institutions are actually sort of interlinked or interdependent on each other, that they coexist alongside each other, or is it is it an option to look at a possible merger, not a merger of functions, but a merger of institutions? How sustainable is it for them to exist alongside each other? Thank you, Jeff.
Yako, I think the check requires to cut us.
Thanks very much, Chair. Chair, just two things on the NAMESA presentation. Also similarly concerned about the amount of income generated. I think the technical infrastructure entities that we have within the DTR need to be doing their best to try and generate some sort of revenue considering, you know, the cost of the transfer that the respective entities receive. And I think to only have 50% of their revenue target roughly that they've achieved, I think is not a great result at all. However, what I would say is that in terms of both presentations, it's nice to actually hear CEOs and staff within the entities that actually know what's going on. And that's not, and it may be foreign matter to me in terms of science and the like, but you can actually hear that they know what's going on in their organisation, so I applaud them for that. And then also just in terms of the facilities that they have, I think linked to revenue generation, I think it's also maybe something they need to look at. Through increasing their revenue, maybe the DTR could assist them with maybe a larger grant to rehouse their premises. And also maybe to find out whether or not if they could move outside the CSIR campus, maybe onto the SAP campus. We saw there were a number of empty facilities at the SAP campus, and that would be a possibility. I'm also aware that tenants have a new building in Equestria as well, which seems to be relatively state of the art, and whether or not there's maybe capacity for them to actually move into that room. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. And let me join the other parties who have commended the two entities on the quality of the presentation and even the challenges, I think, are not too drastic. It's good to see two well-functioning entities. I want to just also join my voice in the concerns raised around the infrastructure of MINISA. And I think, if as portfolio committee we are receiving that as one of the main challenges of MINISA, surely there must be a solution, must be found. And I hear what Honorable Cuthbert is saying about maybe sharing premises, but some solution must be found. Given the international recognition that MINISA receives for their work, and their standing internationally, all that could be undone by a failure of the environment due to infrastructure challenges. So I think let us put our heads together to find a way forward in that respect. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, we will then move to the next part of the second presentation in the similar basis. Can I just take members? Cuthbert, I'll start with you down the road. Check, Cuthbert, no issue on that one. Yako, so you can actually double up. And then I'll ask then Mulder down the road up to your helmets in the same order. Yako, you're on the floor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to concur with Honorable Madong that we do need some sort of take through a thorough date to understand how a minister actually works and how Senate actually works. It's quite technical. And my fear is that we might miss some things because of the technicality of the language, and we might not be able to be able to assist you. So in as much as the reports look good, I also have a feeling that, especially with Senate, there might be a few issues that we might assist you in. Also your HR issues, I'm quite concerned with that. Overall, your relationship with ACBS and NRSA, how is this impacting your functionality as ACBS? Because I know that ACBS is basically dysfunctional at the moment. So how is the synergy between you working with them and NLCA, and what can you do to assist on those entities? And lastly, I wanted to know, with your accreditations, right, do you continuously accredit, or do you accredit once and then just let it go? Is it a continuous process, and how does it work? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Nothing to add.
Okay,
part of my questions are relevant to this one also. They raise the vacancy of it. So we want to check how does it affect the movement or the entity, the vacancy of it. And I want to check whether SANAS vis-a-vis NRCS or NEMISA, who's verifying local content? Is there any local content out there? How are we being assisted as the department in terms of local content? Because no one spoke of local content. And also in terms of revenue, we can't rely to PTI for revenue. You have strategies in terms of building up our own financials so that we are able to promote. Then 13 targets, 11 met and 2 not met. Why not met? Then we have a program of fixing so that when we have a target, you must not miss fire or just fire. You must fire the target. Shoot straight to the target. So there are 2 targets that not met, then the why, can we have a clarity on that one?
Don't say fire, fire without fire.
Yeah, that means fire. The question of accreditation is assigned, which is on page 19, if they can be able to at least elaborate on the assigned accreditation. And also, how do you verify, because the beautiful BDE that is accredited by some. So how then do you begin to verify? Was there this logic of fronting and so forth? How do you verify whether this is a company, a triple C company, that has got no fronting elements? So are you able to detect that? And if so, how so? Thank you.
Just to check with Sanas, how ready are we with accreditation matters relating to the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement? Because surely it will, the trade across all the countries, the economies of Africa will increase, and obviously there must be very strict controls of products being exported and imported. Thank you.
The
photo figures.
Ah,
because the process whereby glass manufacturers.
So let me just get you to listen to this.
Through
So I'm just.
The photo figures here. Is the process whereby plants manufacture their own food through Amalizwe, through Ila. Mina ranga nubai cardiology. Ya ranga nubai uto wakela wenge zi ya shuru uti haa tespeze ya suwa kaya. Ya ranga nabu. The pulmonary circulation. Vale start it as lead deoxygenated. Linyua me pulmonary vein. The exchange of gases through your lungs. Mama who was when a two-man, no misfortune driver, over the blood clot, over a whole video on the shower of a lamb or food. Bertuman, a coronary thrombosis, over the blood clot. Bertuman, a coronary thrombosis.
Yeah.
Yabona, most of the coronary thrombosis in the Kosovo has been taken. Money has been, you are lacking an oxygen. Umuntu la une pancreas la.
Yeah.
Every creating hormone is why insulin. Move the over the Christian. No mean as the Christian. Ubanita Betis Melitas. All Coco Babetu Suga and Amapunati, all Father Desperas. Father Amatoralis to Mukaras Gogo Father. Chocolate and Dolphin Amapu is up to the shooting and swing away. Who's the last man of the woman? Mind you, more affected in a woman to the 18 and the people. Uber their retina is pigment of her, that is the pigmentation of her retina.
So I was just saying our discussion is much better than this, because it's actually friends trying just to do simple communication. On my part, I thought maybe what I will raise there, because what I picked up, there's an issue which the, you know, I'll say the entities raised of infrastructure, but I think in the tone of giving us the picture, it was actually a summary of the wall waiting to fall. I'm just giving that. So that's why I say the guys on the WhatsApp is using very good English. I'm just using the simple one. So the other point which I think might be important, it looks like it's obvious that as a committee with the entities, we should agree that there is a need for intervention. And in terms of need for intervention, you actually, in the input, put it as recapitalization. So we want to note that, and then actually then be able to look at what is it that you thought we should be able to look at. So it's actually the issue relating to maintenance and upgrade. Maintenance and upgrade. Because if we don't actually highlight those issues, it might be an issue that we say we have raised this issue with the committee. The committee actually didn't say anything about it. So we do actually have the SABS and NFCS where we also had an oversight visit. After the oversight visit, we were actually sure that we should actually be speaking on the turnaround strategy when we talk about those two entities. And the reality is that we should actually be able to look at all issues, personnel, right across, including the point you are raising in terms of infrastructure. So the further point, I think what we may say is applicable to all four entities, is an issue relating to transformation, because that is actually talking about your human resource and the people. But I think the big issue is that there might be very good things you do where South Africans may not be even aware that you're doing such an excellent job. So the part one wanted just to raise was, how do we grow the public awareness in terms of just ensuring that we have a good sense of the work you do being acknowledged and understood by South Africans, or even have a space where you can grow interest of South Africans to want to participate in your space. So I'm just saying it's actually a crucial point that we may have to look at. And then maybe the final point is just around the issue of our institutions of higher learning, where we actually get the younger generation, and really when we look at issues of transformation, it should be the younger generation association and involvement, but also on our part we want to make sure that there's representation where there is actually proper participation and involvement. So I think it will be actually issues of gender, issue of youth. And obviously, in terms of South Africans, the majority are women, and I think those are things which are quite actually crucial to be able to look at. So I think those are the comments from my side, just to say it might be just important to be able to, when we come back, the note you have given us of a wall waiting to fall, when you meet us next time, you should be able to say we have a strategy and plan around infrastructure in line with what we think should be a recapitalization. So I'm just saying, those are just my comments. Can I then allow entities to actually just speak to those comments and questions from members? And floor is yours.
Sure. Thank you very much for those comments, and the positive input are very much appreciated, and the suggestions for how we can deal with the challenges we are facing. In terms of the question, there was a cross-cutting question that started with Honorable Mbuyane on the aging infrastructure, with the question as to whether we have a plan. What's the problem? What are we doing that we have with aging infrastructure? I think from an internal processes perspective, you would note when you come to NEMISA that we have picked up the level of skills and resources that we use for maintaining equipment. I mean infrastructure and equipment, because we have an aged infrastructure, and that really affects our operational allocation, because we spend more time doing maintenance, keeping the wall under control, but it is not adequate. There was a plan that the Department of Trade and Industry, together with the Treasury, started a process for recapitalizing NEMISA, where we ran a proper feasibility study, where we looked at areas like what Mr. Cuthbert referred to, the space and the SABS, and many different areas where we looked at which one would be the best option and what it would cost us if we were to do that. And the outcome of that study was a recommendation that the world is for you. One, we need to recapitalize it. We need funding from the fiscal to recapitalize that. The recommendation for a place to build the new infrastructure was made. The choice that was given based on the infrastructure requirements of less vibration, less interference with power pylons, in terms of electricity and magnetism and so on. The area recommended was the Innovation Hub campus, just across the road from the CSIR. The CSIR initially was also seen as one of those that could be utilized, as well as the SNDF. However, during the feasibility study, when we engaged the executive, it became clear that those spaces were not available. I must indicate, fast forward 2-3 years later, the CSIR has indicated that their strategy now is to build the CSIR campus as a government hub. So they are open to discussions for us taking more space, because when we said there are spaces on the other side where there's more vibration from the roads and the railways and so on, they said those we have earmarked them for ourselves. And the same was the case with the SABS, when we said, look, we cannot take all buildings because we're just kicking the ball down the road. We move from old building into old building. We need the space that is away from the roads with vibrations and all those things. And they said, those we earmarked for ourselves. And the feasibility study eventually came up with a recommendation of the Innovation Hub, which is a science park. But when we went to Treasury for final approval, or not necessarily final approval, for Treasury approval one, for the budget to be made available, then affordability was raised as an issue. And that is where we are now. The second option for building was the land next to DERCO or Tambo building. There is a space there that we looked at and we did thorough assessment, and that is the second option that would be viable for developing an NEMISA campus in Pretoria. So I think in terms of program, where we are, what we've done, that is what we've done. Eventually the Department of Trade and Industry approved the 139 million allocation per year to NISA for recapitalization, which was used to recapitalize equipment, the old equipment, and modernize the infrastructure. When you come to NISA, which I hope that workshop will be held in Pretoria, so that you can be able to see something different from what you've seen in the other entities. See what a modern infrastructure looks like in terms of equipment and so on, but it is housed in an aging infrastructure. So that we have used that money to do that equipment recapitalization, and we are in the process of negotiating the municipality of Tshwane and the Department of Public Works for the transfer of that land at the Derco infrastructure. That's just looking at long term to say at least we hope there will be money. When the money is available, you know, they have access to land, then we can be able to develop the infrastructure. I hope Chairperson that answers that question on
just a clarity on the question, because one was saying only four technical infrastructure institutions, because one wants to really encourage that if it's joint plan, because if it's joint plan, it sort of assists us not to replicate same. And you might find that if you are not looking at it together, there might be issues that we miss. So if the planning is actually at that level and there is a coordinated part of the engagement, I think that will be quite a relief on the side of the committee that there is joint planning. And maybe when you have a proposal and a plan, it will be actually looking across our technical infrastructure institutions, which we're actually looking at. So I think maybe that's one point, because the infrastructure one is an issue right across all four of the institutions. So I think maybe that's the point there. One was actually saying, without going to the detail, it will be important for the department, I think we'll raise the same, to say the institution and the department should be able to look at all four institutions in a way of an intervention when you look at the issue of infrastructure. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. So with that conclusion on that issue of infrastructure, the next question from Ms. Andrea was on the fragmented methodology function. And the question as to can the committee assist, what is being done to ensure that that is dealt with. At the moment, there is a study that the DTI has commissioned through TIPS to look at the quality infrastructure as a whole, the outcome of which we hope will be also making recommendations on the fragmentation and how do we deal with it. From an initial perspective, we are doing our bit to ensure that the methodology function gets consolidated and presented as a shared service to the government. An interesting question on the food safety standard with relation to the pressures and what is going on. It's a very interesting question. It's a very good case study for how regulation should work and how regulation should not work, where the scientific standard gets set. The private sector, and I want to use this opportunity to also deal with the question by Mr. Mulder as to whether there are private laboratories that are involved in the work that there's a lot of. There's more private laboratories than government laboratories that get traceability from the media. So those laboratories would set up their testing processes in line with the standards that are set by SARS. And then to make sure that there is assurance that the testing that is done is proper and above board, that's where accreditation comes in, to do that third-party attestation that the testing that gets done is in line with the standards. There is traceability to the national measurement standards, which are the scientific standards that the minister test, there is competence of laboratory personnel that does the testing, there is proper training and development and so on and so on, all the aspects that SANAS would look at. So that is what gets done. We ourselves, as MEMISA, would not get involved in the checking of the products. Now, the quality infrastructure extends beyond the testing space, where the National Regulator for Compulsory Certification can do market surveillance when they go check products in the market. And that's the role they should be playing, of ensuring that this regulated compulsory certification gets checked and confirmed accordingly. And they then use this private lab to test those products that they collect during the survey. This private lab gets accredited by SANAS that they are using the MEMISA traceability. So it becomes a well-run system that if there are failures in regulation at different points, that's why we eventually find ourselves in situations we find ourselves having to respond in an urgent basis when we shouldn't. So I hope that takes care of that question, which also came from Honorable Kaplan. Chair, there was a question to MEMISA on the gender representation. I will talk to the gender representation at the executive management level and just talk to equity as a whole in the organization, and then allow the chair to talk to the equity and representativity at the board. In the executive, we currently have 6 executives supporting the CEO. 3 of those are female. So it's a 50-50 split that supports the CEO. In terms of race, it is also a 50-50 split for race as it stands. In terms of youth, unfortunately at the executive level, Morale just crossed the level that he could be called a youth. So, but in the organization, we have taken an approach in our strategic planning 6 years ago of bringing in young people into the organization who are given buzzards. So we were about 96 when we started this process. Now we are about 186 in total, which includes the WebBed contract from our buzzards that have graduated with PhDs and MSCs. And those are primarily majority youth, and the demographic representation in that group is representative of the country's demographic. And we are very happy with that. And we have a succession plan that shows those that are retiring, they get replaced with equity considerations being the primary consideration, and ensuring that it stays. And I want to touch on the point also raised by the chair on universities and our relationship with universities. It is a very important relationship. I'll give an example of the University of Cape Town, where we have launched last year what we call the Measure program, which is a program that focuses on metrology in the physics department. We are working towards getting that program registered as a chair for research in the university. It will be the first chair for metrology in the world. And those processes are far advanced. We have relationships with the University of Limpopo, University of Venda, where we develop the human capital that is required. Considering that we don't only develop it for the MEMISA, but we develop it for the measurement fraternity as a whole. We are currently in the process of registering metrology as a field of practice with the South African Council for Natural and Scientific Professions, SACNASP, so that when those graduates get into the work world, like engineers, they would also have a career ladder that allows them to move and be considered. So we are very strong in human capital development, using the training and development as a way to bring about equity, so that we have competent people coming into the organization, so that our international training doesn't get us affected. I think, having said that, I'll allow, if you permit, chair, for the board chair to look at the equity issues on the board.
Chair.
Thank you, sir. Our board is composed of 7 people currently, 4 ladies and 3 gentlemen. We still have an opening for 1 person. The gap was left by the passing away of Ms. Shoma, who was our board member. So the DTI has conducted interviews to replace the person, and we've asked that we should be provided with a person of financial skills or of financial background. We also undergo training. We've got a development program for board members. We look at where we are lacking in terms of our performance, but so far I must say that Matthew we do have some gaps in terms of training. We have always been getting trained and unqualified audits. So this is how we are functioning. Thank you very much.
We generally would pick up with the delegation when it comes in. When you sit and then you say, ah, okay, now we can see. But what you explain is actually helping on the issue that we really put at the higher part of our agenda when we engage. Maybe if there are further inputs from Namisa, we'll actually do that, and then maybe we can actually take the other entity for comments.
I think just a few comments with regards to the questions asked by Honorable Noda. The budget implications of moving from 15 to 21 to 10. This is actually not a negative impact for us, because we talk to the different stakeholders within the system that we do take interns in. We started a process of talking to the CETA, the Sector Education and Training Authority, that have contributed to some of the interns that we added to the list. The Innovation Hub has added contribution to the list of interns to place interns at NISA. So we do it considering that we have limited resources, so we augment it with partnerships with other role players. And there's a difficult question of how do we increase the visibility, but considering questions, how do we measure that visibility? We have looked at options. We chose the alternative of looking at advertising value equivalent. So we insource or outsource the services of an external party that looks at our presence at different levels of the economy, and every quarter they give us a report, and we are able to check based on the input we've given, like billboards, talking at community radio stations, talking at schools, high schools, talking at business forum, what do we get as our presence? And that's what we use for that measure. So it's not something that we sit and we say, yes, we think we're doing good. We are not too happy with what our presence is, and we are working very hard together with NRCS, subs and summers to ensure that our profile and the quality culture in the country get preached accordingly. And we're hoping the committee would also help us in preaching a quality culture. Chair, if you allow, I'll make my take on the cheap imports that are coming into the country. If we have a quality culture in the country, we can lock them out by not buying them. Just by training people, that you can't just keep buying. And this is something that as public representatives, you can assist us quite a lot in really inculcating this quality culture. Remove the carrot for the importers to bring this cheap product. But then we as technical people play our part to ensure that technically we knock them out. But the culture has to be proper. And national quality policy, and this is something that the Department of Trade and Industry is looking at now, is a very important aspect. At the Africa level, we are discussing the Africa quality policy, which deals with how the whole thing works. Then we need a national one, and that is the question and comment made by the chair as to how do we get these things together. My view is we need to start at a national quality policy and then build it from that base, and we are able to implement and have a proper oversight of what's going on where and what is going on where it goes on. Because when things break, you don't even know who to call, because the coordination somewhere is not properly and effectively implemented. That was a personal take to the whole thing, but I think it's one that if considered, it can help us go a long way.
It's going local as lacquer, but local should be available as well.
Oh, yeah.
So that we don't actually have the foreign product.
Yeah.
We don't have our own, we can't even promote our own product. Very important.
Last comment on the questions, and I hope I've answered all of them, is the merger of institutions. We did not enhance efficiency. There are more negatives than positives to a merger in a quality infrastructure. And this is because of the need for that independence in the operation. If I am governed the same with SANAS who comes and accredits me, there are issues there. But internationally, that's where the real challenge is, that we want to project a picture out there that our conformity assessment data can be trusted. And for that, you need to have this arm's length engagement that we have kept. However, you need the overall coordination at the DCI level or whatever government entity level that helps us implement our national quality policy when we have it. Chair, so those are my responses, and colleagues, if there's something I've missed, they can come in.
So we'll actually just round up and then we'll pick up the clarity question now. But Chair, Roger.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to also indicate that during our last board meeting, we discussed the issue of visibility in terms of organizing an annual event where we are going to bring all our stakeholders under one roof and ourselves, and also be able to bring other people externally to be able to make ourselves visible and be known. So that is one of the issues that we think is important we have agreed on during the last board meeting. Thank you.
All right, so you can take the next entity.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with the more general questions. My chair will deal with the issue of the board representation. Thank you very much for these questions. I want to respond to Honourable Yaku's questions. We obviously welcome a workshop. I still try to convince my wife and my children to understand what I actually really do. So we know it's quite a difficult subject normally to explain. With regards to the issue of the HR issues, I would also like to link that with the question that was asked on the vacancy rate and how that impacts us. In terms of the HR specific issues, the tool that I talked about, the HR manager left us earlier this year, as well as the BE verification agency. What is important is something that Mimisa talked about. Our expertise are very specialized, and the market would normally hunt our people specifically in the bee space, as we have seen that. But if you look at the SANA's history in terms of the how long people stay with us, most of our sectors, at least 50% of their sectors, have a record of 15 years and more with SANA's. If you look at our senior managers, they have an average of 10 years with SANA's. And if you look at the area of our administration, that's about 7 years on average within SANA's. So we don't have a big turnover in our particular organizations. Yes, we do face some challenges in terms of demand, in terms of wage increases and things like that, which is part of the normal process. We need to maintain that balance between staff costs and operational costs all the time as well. So that is one of the things. What are we doing right now is that we have, through our board, we had a strategic session not so long ago. The new plan that we put in place now, the five-year plan, requires a change in direction, and one of the key focus areas is the mutual acceptance of conformity assessment results, and we now have to align our organization to be able to meet those objectives that we set. So we management presenting will be presenting to the at an upcoming board meeting a revised organizational structure that will basically deal with a lot of some of the weaknesses that we've identified, as well as with the alignment of ensuring that we can achieve our strategic objectives. With regards to the relationship between the SFAS and NRCS, which we should realize that the day-to-day functions of the SFAS are still being performed at the technical level. The committee's need standards are being developed. There might be delays in those particular processes due to the governance issues that's currently not so sound at this point in time, but we got a good relationship. We participate in those technical committees where we're required to, specifically when we know conformity assessment is going to be required. So we have a good relationship with them, same with the NRCS. For instance, we accredit a lot of the verification agencies. They are the regulator, they do the approvals. We do accreditation, and part of the approval requirements, these bodies must be accredited because they are private entities, and that gives them the confidence that they can base the decisions on that. For instance, tomorrow, hopefully not, or I'm not quite sure, pretty soon the petrol price will be announced soon. So when that happens, normally the increase, we want to know, when we pay X per liter, we want to know we have so much per liter. So the verification agencies are these guys goes around and measure basically what you're getting for you're actually getting the value that you pay for petrol. So we accredit those kind of verification agencies, and the NRCS is the regulator in that particular space that approves them. So we got a good working relationship. In fact, we got a good working relationship with all of the technical infrastructure institutions. The important thing, as the CEO of NMIS has said, SANA's needs to be independent in its decision making. So you would see last year, the year before, we had to suspend SAS. We can't say that SAS is part of the technical infrastructure institution. We need to handle them in exactly the same issues. Where we cooperate quite closely is when it comes to the national interest issues, where we need to align and make sure we get a specific outcome on the national interest. But when it comes to the competition, where it's similar in the conformity assessment space, where they compete with other industries, the same with NISA, the same with the verification agents, etc., they need to be able to be assessed in the same way, decisions need to be made in the same way. And that is key to the us maintaining our international recognition integrity within the global environment as well. So principally, the relationships are good. There can be improvements in terms of stabilizing the SFAS, obviously, and also the issues between the discussion in terms of clarification on legal methodology between the two different structures. I just would like to also just touch while I'm there also on the importance of the infrastructure in the MISA. The MISA, as you know, and that, as they already explained, when SANA's do the accreditation, the issue of accreditation is not only about the competence of the people. Competence, we look at the issues of the environment, the standard, the equipment, all of those issues makes up the competence an organization to perform a specific task. So when the issues of the environment, such as Namisa has highlighted, start to impact on the results that they produce, we will have to act and withdraw accreditation. We are not at that stage, but we keep on monitoring that. So therefore, the environment, the infrastructure required, becomes quite important, that needs to be supported for Namisa. Then with regards to the question on the assessments and the intervals, you don't get accredited once and you credit for all of it. You get accredited for what you can demonstrate you can do. So you can't basically get accreditation for water. You're going to get accreditation for very specific tests that you can demonstrate in this thing for, if you have to test for chloride, that is what you get accredited in accordance to what's standard. That is what you get accreditation for, very specific. And you get evaluated on some 18-month basis and some on an annual basis, depending on what is prescribed. Every 4 years, the cycle basically starts again. So in between what we call surveillance assessments, within that surveillance assessments, we look at part of areas that concern us. In the 4 year, we do a full evaluation. So it's not if you're accredited once, you remain accredited. You can lose your accreditation if you don't keep up your competence. I now want to address the issue of the local content that was discussed as well. The local content has been assigned by the Department of Trade and Industry to the SABS. So the SABS is the body that actually looks after local content, and they have a program in place for verification of local content. I think at the last meeting for the committee today, they explained some of the work that they're doing within that particular space. With regards to the financials, yes, we've actually realized that we're going to have to become less dependent on the government grants, because that has been the trend now over the past three years, where our contribution has been reduced quite a bit. So in our upcoming strategic plan, we actually have a key measurement where we're going to measure our reliance or decreasing our reliance on government income as such. Through new programs, establishments, etc., also starting to look very specifically into the NDP programs that our ministers will make available to us as we move forward. And as you can see from our quarterly reports, there's a few new areas such as asset management, etc., that we already have developed programs in or in the process of developing programs in. So those are the areas that we see that we would be able to increase growth in the accreditation, and hopefully also increase the income. 2 years ago, we've also changed our training, which we call our knowledge transfer area, into a cost center. Before it was just there to support, but we changed it into a cost center, and it's generating some income, and we will obviously invest in that area some more as well. So yes, in principle, we are aware of the fact that we need to become more self-sufficient in our funding process, and we're working towards that. The issue of the targets, why we not met, as I explained, we had two targets. One was about the vacancy rate. Unfortunately, some of that happens at a time it takes quite a while to get people employed again. So I think in the next quarter we should not be able to record not meeting that particular target. As I already said, one of the positions will be filled, or already been filled, offers been made and accepted, so it will start on the 1st of March. The other one, we're also working very hard to make sure that we can actually close that one as well. But in general, we do have sufficient people. As I said, we will be adding in our new structure some more capabilities and competencies to assist us in the facilitation of the trade as we move forward. On the other matter, which is, as Namisha also highlighted, some of the issues, we start with the development of programs such as in the CEDA case, and then you move forward, and unfortunately at a point you're dependent on how far the organization moves in terms of the standards development or the criteria that's required for accreditation in that space. And sometimes the regulations and those are not moving, we're not moving at the same pace. It takes sometimes very long for regulations to propagate it as such. But these are the issues we started to adjust. We participate and make sure we can help as far as we can without compromising our independence in these processes. On the issue of BEE verification and fronting, we know that's a big problem. And you would know that when we do detect those issues, there is the commissioner. The commissioner is a regulator, she's got the powers to act contravention of law. So when we do, we would know and notify, we will work together and making sure that we can actually get to those points. That the commissioner, as you've seen, has recently issued quite a few notes in that regard as well. So we cooperate, we do this verification on behalf of the commission as such, and under the auspices of the DTI area that looks at triple BEE. So yeah, when we do detect it, it's not normally easy for the accreditation to detect it. The market normally reflects back in terms of those particular areas as well. But when we do detect it in this particular process, or even a rumor of such, as you know, last year or the year before, we had to suspend power tax and we had to go through that whole process because it was a question that came through this structure in terms of structural parliament. And we had to investigate, and that's why we had to suspend at that point in time. And there's normally a lot of those ones. These are the big ones who are normally draw the media's attention for the media. But there's others as well that we act on when we do find these kind of contravention. But when it comes to prosecutions, etc., the BE regulator is empowered to commissioner is empowered to do that function. I also thank you for the question on the African Continental Free Trade Area. We do spend a lot of time in that particular space. And the reason for that is that we need to ensure that we can accept goods and services coming from our member state. Our president has this clear direction in terms of how the African Continental Free Trade Area is going to impact our economic growth issues. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the goods and services that we export into our region also meet the required the requirements, the quality requirements. So as far as we've been involved in assisting the establishment of accreditation bodies on the continent, a few years ago, about 10 years ago, there was only SANAS that was internationally recognized. We have at a very fast pace within the past 10 years, there's about 7 accreditation bodies now internationally recognized, Ethiopia, Kenya, Mauritius. We have also established an accreditation body in the Southern Africa to deal with those SADC member states who do not have an accreditation body, a national accreditation body. So there's 13 of them that's covered by a body called SACAS, which is SADC Accreditation Services. We've been involved in that. We chair the technical infrastructure component on accreditation, which is AFRAC. And this body falls under a body called PATI, the Pan African Quality Infrastructure, which is recognized by the African Union as the Africa's quality infrastructure as such. And we participate in that. Unfortunately, we should have been holding the chair at this point in time, but the events proceeding at this point in time didn't allow me to step in there, and we have made that available to Nigeria, who will be chairing the PATI for the next 2 years as such. So a lot of our effort goes in the continental free trade area, both at regional level but also internationally. We have made, for instance, presentations at the WTO on the African quality infrastructure, and a lot of ways we're actually leading the world on the issues of quality infrastructure in the region. But in the African, under the trade area, there's a new document that's going to come out. It's the quality infrastructure document. And we hope that if that goes through, we would be having a standing annexure to the trade, the agreement, the Continental Free Trade Agreement. We already have that within the tripartite free trade area, where it's recognized, these institutions are recognized to provide the required infrastructure in that space. I would also just, even though the question was not directed at me, just want to reiterate what the CEO of NME said. The issue of mergers of of the technical infrastructure is important to note. We have been there. that is how he was structured in the old days, and that's what we noticed. All of those resided under the SCDS. And when we became part of this global village, we had to comply to the TBT agreement under WTO. And that requires those independence and impartiality issues to be addressed, and that's why it's structured in the way it is. Our action says clearly we need to provide an internationally recognized structures that is comparable to best practice in the world. So that is where we are. We are South Africa. We have every now and then other countries coming to look at our technical infrastructure and how it operates. The issues that we need to address is structural issues internally. It's not necessary to do with how we are structured in terms of making sure we can deliver those issues. Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Chair. I think mine is to deal with the agenda balance within the board, which is quite a bit tricky in the sense that the responsibility of appointment of board members is really the responsibility of the shareholder. And as of now, based on that, the board is composed of 10 members, 3 of whom are female, means that the board as it is 30% female, and I'm sure we could improve on that in the sense that we have one member who has a male also resigned at the end of December, whereupon we have requested the shareholder to replace that individual because he has skills that we need within the board, and also we have requested an additional member with legal background, and hopefully if the shareholder could appoint 2 females, that will definitely change the complexion of the gender balance within the board. That's what I would say.
Sorry, Chair, I missed that one in the organization as well, so let me respond to that question as well. But you know, in fairness, in terms of gender balance, at a different levels, at the administration level, we have about over 70% of our staff being female. At the senior manager level, we have a 50-50 split. And at the executive level, unfortunately, I have 3 executives, 4 executives. One of them is female. It's one of the positions that we would be discussing pretty soon. So that's a 25% at the executive level.
I actually saw you wanting to raise the point, but I just thought what might be helpful, if ever there are any further comments or questions from members, we do that. Then we'll actually go back to the chairs just to see how we actually then try and conclude our process here and then see how we actually have the way forward. So let me check from the members if ever there are any further issues that you want to raise as questions for clarity and or comments. Kathel, any?
No, Chief.
Yakum? Mulder? Mtaum? Covered. And then let's get to Mbuyan. So you're representing us now. But we all say no, he will cover us. He'll cover us. Okay, Mbuyan on the floor?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine was not responded to. There was no revenue generation. From Namibia, and also the question of food safety vis-à-vis standards. I was covered in terms of that question because the standard, you must also be able to verify whether these other people is able to meet your standards. So if you just put standards and leave like that, then you know, somehow we're losing the point. And the integration of all these technical admin entities is very much important. Then also, Chair, on the issue of succession plan, that is it's very much paramount and important. But I would also like if they can go down to also the high school, not only the university, so that they are able to deal with this career guidance
we are at an earlier stage so that those learners are able to understand exactly what it is that they want to do in terms of the technical aspect.
The last one is awareness and ethical adjustment now. The question of transformation, you see, if you call like 50-50 two gender, that balance, you are not talking demographic, you are talking of young people, you are talking of disability, you are talking of all those kind of things. So it will be of paramount importance to say if we are trying to balance the demographic, even those ones that are disabled, they are part of us, they must get at least something on the chart. The youth, the vulnerable, and so forth. So I think on the succession plan that we will talk to those issues properly. The last but not least, the local content verification. I have a strong problem because here we have structures that entities that they even pass the auditor general requirements, and you get SABS that's supposed to be verifying. To me, I don't get a notion because SABS, as we speak now, they're in serious challenge in terms of even pass their own audit. That means they are failing to execute their own job. So it will be very much important for at least to have this all in this structure, the one that deals with technical, to be able to agree and work together, to have a coherence in terms of working together. Because if you go there, MINISA and SANAS, you leave NSRS and SABS on the mat, to us, it doesn't augur well. Because all of you guys were technical aspects in terms of the DTI. So it will be proper for you guys also to go there and at least the SAPS and get into the issues. Thank you, Chair.
And then let me actually take the chairperson and maybe you'll check if ever there's any addition from your teams first, Chair, and then we actually can ask the chair. Are there any comments to CEOs and the technical side, and then we can take you first if there's any, and then ask the chairperson to try and actually round up. Let's start with the CEO, so if there's any particular issue you want to raise in comments or questions that we raise.
I think, Chair, the question raised on the standards, do we verify and make sure people use and meet our standards? I've tried to answer it in an indication that the system has got checks and balances, and it is structured in the way that it has got four pillars, because those checks and balances are in the structure. So it is the full and efficient implementation of the structure that ensures that there are checks and balances. We give the certificate of calibration, which is a proof that an entity that is going to do conformity assessment is traceable to the national measurement standard. But then it is not our role to ensure that they use it as such. It is now SANAS that comes in through the accreditation process to attest independently that that is being done. And that is what provides that assurance within the system. So it is the efficient operation of the system that provides that assurance. And hence, the actual government oversight and regulation need to be done at that level. I've got a saying that I usually use, saying, you cannot regulate a conformity assessment. You need to regulate at setting the standards and ensuring that they are used. Then the conformity assessment is easier. It gives you that level of assurance. I hope that deals with that issue. on whether we can go and assist the SABS and so on. It's a difficult one. I think the DTI can respond on that. What I can indicate is echo the sentiments raised by the chair of, I mean the CEO of SANA, when he said at the technical level we engage very strongly. If you look at the technical committees of the SABS, they are staffed mainly by experts from NISA, because that's where the actual technical standards are set. So in that regard, we engage. In terms of calibration, there we engage. But the governance issues, that's a different situation that I think the DTI can assist in ensuring that it is run properly. The issue of revenue, I think from NIMISA's perspective, as we have indicated, we put this drive to increase our revenue from both private sector laboratories and from government. And one of the approaches is ensuring that we provide directly metrology services to the state to ensure that what we have observed when we did our studies is that the state pays twice for metrology. They provide a grant to NIMISA to develop the capability, and then they go and pay for the calibration services that somebody else pays whatever. I use an example of breathalyzers for drunken driving. They take it from the municipality and they bring it to NIMISA and then go charge the state for that calibration. So it is that alignment of regulation and how we operate that is very important, and assistance in ensuring that the different government entities operate in a coordinated fashion would assist in ensuring that this asset, which is a measurement capability for the country, is utilized effectively, but it is sustainable in the long term. So that statement will then go to the organization, the NISA, to ensure that we utilize what is invested in efficiently.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have a lot to add apart from saying thank you for all the feedback that we have received, and we've noted those points. I just wanted to touch on one of the issues in terms of the support to the SABS, etc. Yes, it's clear it is the governance issues, and I think it's also important that the committee and all of us start to see SABS for what it is, firstly, a national interest organization, before we see them as a commercial entity in that sense. And that's going to be quite important on how things could move forward. Thank you.
Can I then ask for chairs just to conclude?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to thank the committee for giving us an opportunity to come and make a presentation and for them to understand the type of animal we are and how we operate and how we make things happen. And we believe that when we are building, we are going to get that success. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Chairperson, and one of the members of the committee, and for listening to us, give us this opportunity. And also, I think I take it from what Honorable Member Down raised in terms of the proposed workshop, which I think going forward that will assist us a great deal in terms of understanding the kind of institution that we are. And by so doing, surely going forward, it will also assist us in getting your support even more. So at the end of the day, I would like to thank you and hope for your support as we move on. Thank you.
Let me just say, on our side, we would be quite comfortable with the four entities being able to use the opportunity to strengthen the space where they are in. Because I think in terms of mandates, it doesn't seem there's any conflict or overlap. So in the absence of that, it means each of the entities standing alone have a full program and there are no issues. And the point of cooperation to be able to actually help us to get some sense of intervention to strengthen the ties and strengthen the space of these entities, it will be something that we can easily request, and you can collectively be able to set up a space, it may be a task team, with the department who can be able to then help us get a sense of what kind of intervention we can have. What is very obvious is that there is need. We may use different terminology, but the big one we actually have picked up as a committee was the issue of recapitalization. But it actually came after the reference being made to infrastructure. So obviously I think without actually giving instruction on the side of the committee, we think it seems to be an issue that cuts across a bit more severe on two of the entities that we visited, and to a point that we can say old infrastructure needs intervention. Because obviously, if I would say I'm looking at upgrading that part, it makes sense. If you say you're looking at maintenance, it will actually also make sense. But you might find that you want to develop something completely different. We are in a different space now because there's fourth industrial revolution. There is the issue of modernization. And you might find that you may not physically need huge piece of land to do that, but you'll do it more efficiently and more smart in a way that actually on what we have, because we've got old buildings, we have actually old infrastructure in some other areas we are able to actually upgrade more to infrastructure relating to what our work should be outside infrastructure on where we are housed as entities, because that's what we actually pick up. The old buildings are assets. They can be used for something alternative. And you might find, because I think the good thing is that of your input that you have given, you are even making reference of entities which may not be naturally at the space of what you are doing, and you actually can be able to actually look at all the different entities. When you say CSIR is actually one entity which may have a good piece of land, obviously when you actually look at that, it's a point where it's government entity, there is opportunity to actually use a physical space, but technically you would actually find that for the other entities there may be other things which are suitable. It's no longer a point of being able to be in the same geographic space because technology is actually at a different level. But it will be good to have all four entities working out a plan and be able to use the available space and opportunity from other entities and come up with something which is more sustainable and futuristic. Because at this point, we actually have you with the background. You come a long way. Where you are now, we need to actually get you to give much more clarity on the basis of what we should be doing and what we can actually do better moving forward. So I'd like to thank the entities for coming through and hope that through the department as well, we can encourage all four entities to talk to a similar issue that comes right across, particularly of infrastructure. But we do talk about people as well. And we actually look at the point of making sure that the issue of modernization makes you to be more efficient in the space where you're in. So can I conclude our meeting by just checking if ever there's any announcement or issues, maybe issue for the coming meeting is next Tuesday. Yeah, if you can just speak to that if ever there's anything, then we can actually close our meeting. After that, so that we know what we're doing in the next part, because on our program. So that will be the third. Yeah? if it had not exposed things. Yeah, 3rd of March. So the next meeting is actually 3rd of March. We're looking at the briefing by the minister on the issues relating to SONA and the budget, as well as actually the mandate of our entity, particularly the department, which will be the DTI and EDG, which actually do then the briefing by the DTI on the third quarter financial and non-financial performance. So I think that's our next meeting. So I think for members, thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned.